Good to have you along. So I'm seeing some headlines and stories that suggest that Ukraine has Russia on the run. Joining me to talk about this, professor at the Royal Military College and Queen's University, senior fellow at the McDonald Laurier Institute, and author Christian Leprecht. Good morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
I'm sure you know the stories I'm talking about. Is there truth behind that? Are they starting to see some real success in Ukraine?
Well, both sides are obviously spinning the narrative here to the best of their interests. But it would appear that the Ukrainians had two big successes. One is that obviously they've taken back a significant amount of terrain and sort of a lightning speed offensive that exploited Russian weakness. But I would say the greater success for Ukraine is that they appear to have run a huge ruse on the Russians by getting them to redeploy their forces to the south. And this, of course, kind of these strategic distractions, that is an old game in warfare, and that requires very close coordination. And it's probably also why the Ukrainians have curtailed some of the reporting from the front lines, because that would otherwise, of course, allow some of the intelligence to come out about troop movements, Ukrainian troop movements, and so forth. So it would appear that the Ukrainians really have the Russians on the run, not just physically, but also in terms of their intelligence and strategic capacities. And that would make the Russians, especially the Russian leadership, very uncomfortable, because it means that their intelligence system is once again failing them terribly.
All right. And we'll get back to the leadership in just a moment. But is it true then, Christian, that in a battle, it's not all totally about who has the might, it's also about who has the brains?
Yeah, so one of the challenges for Ukraine is that they can't get into an attrition-type warfare with the Russians, because the Russians just have so many more capabilities in terms of the manpower, as well as, of course, just sheer materiel in terms of tanks and artillery. So the Ukrainians have been engaging since the beginning of the war, really, in very astute maneuver warfare that in large part is also due to the Canadian training that they've received since 2015. Now it appears that they're able to exploit that maneuver warfare capability really to keep the Russians guessing and keep the Russians on the run. The challenge, of course, now is, will Ukraine be able to hold the territory that they've been able to regain?
Well, Vladimir Zelensky says his troops have retaken more than 6,000 square kilometers in a matter of weeks. The movement of our troops continues, he said. Can they chase Russia out, or can they only make it last long enough to, and look bad enough that maybe at some point Russia just says this isn't working and they quit?
So let's not underestimate how much territory that is. That's like taking back all of Prince Edward Island in a fairly heavily defended area. So that's no small feat for the Ukrainians right there. The Ukrainians have two challenges. One is that they wanted to avoid the Russians running these illegal referenda to try to formalize the annexation of parts of Ukraine, and they appear to have succeeded in that. The other is that as the winter comes, the terrain becomes very inhospitable and impassable. And so it makes it very different to engage in the sort of lightning maneuver warfare that the Ukrainians have been engaged in the last week. And so what the Ukrainians are trying to do is move the defensive lines as far back as possible, because once the fall comes, once the terrain gets muddy, the Russians will spend the winter digging in wherever those defensive lines run. So it's in the Ukrainians' interest to try to keep the Russians on the run and try to make as much in terms of inroads as they can. But that also comes, of course, at considerable risk, and not just in terms of making sure that they can succeed with the offensives, but that the Russians aren't, that they're not running into the counteroffensive.
Christian Leprecht is with me, professor at the Royal Military College. So when the going gets tough, it always is, it has been from day one, because we're talking about war here, but when it gets even worse as winter comes in, as you were just discussing, does soldier motivation play in? In other words, I think the Ukrainians are pretty motivated to keep their own country, and I'm not sure every Russian soldier even wants to be there.
Well, I mean, the reports of the Russians just basically abandoning posts, tanks, vehicles, and just basically getting on the run shows that the Russians are not determined to fight. And the Ukrainians have the big advantage that their troops are probably quite fatigued after months of fighting, but continue to appear to be highly motivated. And of course, if you're able to mount this sort of counteroffensive and do it successfully, you can that even troops that are fatigued and perhaps a little frustrated with the defensive warfare that they've been engaged in for months would now be very motivated to go after the Russians. So I think the Russians have a significant challenge. They've replaced two of the senior commanders in the last week. But there's an old joke about the Second World War that communications only ran one way from Moscow down to the front lines. And it appears that that's what's happening again, that Moscow is giving commands that the front lines and the commanders on the front lines simply don't reflect the realities of what they're faced with. And so the disconnect between the expectations, both military and political, in Moscow and the ability of commanders on the ground to deliver with the capacities that they have at their disposal.
Christian Luprecht is with me. But I also read, and again, when you're getting reports out of war, both sides are telling their story, and initial reports are almost always wrong when it comes to these kinds of situations. But I'm understanding that Putin's problem now is he's losing his government. Maybe there were people who were actually demanding he step down.
Well, this, of course, is part of the effort here, right? You have to delegitimize Putin and the support that he enjoys. And you can see that that support, despite of sort of reporting in Western media, has never been quite that solid because, look, he's been able to, if you have solid support, you don't need to engage in large-scale coercion and propaganda and clamping down on the free press and imprisoning your opposition if people actually believe you. And so I think what you have now is coming to the surface is inherently you're going to get a lot of infighting, especially among the elite, given that what Putin has been engaged in has not been to their success, but it has been, much of the blame has currently been laid on the Ministry of Defense in order to deflect from Putin. Putin rarely does U-turns. He rarely sort of admits any sort of mistakes. So what Putin will do is attempt to deflect. But as the Russians run low on manpower, run low on ammunition, I think the coming weeks will be very interesting because it appears that the same supply line issues that the Russians had early on in the conflict are now imperiling their ability even to hold the territory that they've spent months trying to gain. Well, so certainly it appears the momentum is on the Ukrainian side.
How much power does Putin actually have in Russia? Is he a Saddam Hussein type who is in total control until he's dead? Or in fact, are there a group of people who can say, you know what, you're done?
So previous conflicts that Russia is engaged in and lost have not worked out well for the leadership. If you think of the Russian-Japanese War in 2004-2005 that resulted in a revolution, and then, of course, the mistakes of the First World War that resulted in a revolution. And if nothing else, Putin certainly knows his history and the consequences. The challenge Putin will certainly have is trying to keep the cronies with whom he has built Russia over the last 25 years or so on side. These are all his friends from the intelligence services. There's a reason he surrounds himself with friends because he doesn't trust anyone else. And so if those people start getting frustrated with him, then it could get very interesting. The problem is that what's waiting in the wing in Russia is probably an even more aggressive ultra-nationalist approach to Russian politics than what Putin has delivered. So regime change is not necessarily the answer to the conundrum that we're facing.
You talked about how Ukraine has benefited from Canadian military training. How involved is Canada in all of this?
Well, so Canada, of course, from 2015 to 2022, trained about 35,000 Ukrainian
troops. No, I'm going to run out of time here. So my question is, right now, what are we doing?
We're training 10,000 Ukrainian troops between now and the end of the year with the United Kingdom, in the United Kingdom, and all of those troops are already making a significant contribution to the fight in Ukraine.
So we are involved absent just getting in there with our own troops, and I guess that's not going to happen.
There is certainly an increasing amount of intelligence exchange between Ukraine and especially the United States, but it appears that NATO member countries currently are staying out of a lot of the bilateral relationship, and that appears to be a relationship between the United States and Ukraine. The other NATO members here are engaged in other forms of support, including training and weapons deliveries. Canada has in the past provided some geospatial intelligence to the Ukrainians.
Christian Luprecht, always great to have you. Thanks for this.
My pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
It's the iHeartRadio Talk Network.